Just imagine, the mightiest heroes of our time.
All of them on one team.
The Fire and Water Network proudly presents
JLU Cast.
Welcome to JLU Cast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, Cindy Franklin.
And I'm Chris Franklin, and we're back with part two of the four-part Cadmus arc finale, this episode titled Flashpoint. I know what you're thinking. This has nothing to do with the series that destroyed decades of DC continuity and birthed the problematic New 52. But it does involve the fate of a certain Scarlet Speedster, kinda, as we'll soon see.
When last we left our heroes, Superman and Huntress were rescuing the Question from a Cadmus facility, only to be warned to go no further by their supposed teammate, Captain Atom. Let's go back in.
Flashpoint originally aired July 2, 2005, written by Dwayne McDuffie, directed by Joaquin Dos Santos, with music by Lolita Ritmanis. In the cast, we had Carl Lumley as John Jones, George Newbern as Superman, Michael Rosenbaum as The Flash, Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor, CCH Pounder as Amanda Waller, Ken Schreiner as Green Arrow, Jeffrey Combs as The Question, Chris Cox as Captain Atom, Amy Acker as The Huntress, Nicole Tom as Supergirl, and Robert Forster as The President.
Superman and Huntress try to reason with Captain Atom, but he has his orders. He uses red solar energy to blast Superman, weakening him. The two engage in an intense battle as Huntress tries to get Question outside so she can call Jean for a beam out. The battle eventually opens up the wall, and Huntress makes the call to a confused Jean. Superman is finally able to knock a battered Captain Atom out. When Cadmus medics and soldiers rush to his aid, Superman orders them away. He's Justice League. The Man of Steel carries Captain Atom off.
Back on the Watchtower, the unconscious Captain Atom's containment suit is repaired, while Huntress looks over the bedridden Question. Superman fills in Supergirl on the events that transpired, including learning that Professor Hamilton probably created her clone, Galatea. Question tells Superman he planned to kill Luthor before the Man of Steel had the chance. He warns Superman not to take action against Cadmus and Luthor, lest the events of the Justice Lord's world happen here. Superman debates taking Cadmus down with Jean, Supergirl, Green Arrow, and The Flash. Green Arrow admits he finds the League's power scary and justifies Cadmus having measures to take down the League if necessary.
Meanwhile, Amanda Waller phones Lex Luthor, telling him about Superman freeing the Question. While they are speaking, Lex activates a device that seems to involve the League Watchtower locking onto a target. On the Watchtower, the binary fusion generator starts to activate. Despite Jean ripping the wiring out, the gun reinitializes, drawing power from the station itself. Superman flies out to stop the blast, but is thrown aside. The beam strikes Cadmus' headquarters, leaving a crater in the earth and a nearby city in ruins.
With the Watchtower in blackout mode, the League has no idea how much damage was done. Dr. Light retrieves the unconscious Superman while Flash, Green Arrow, and a rescue team head to Earth. Jean receives a call from the U.S. President. He assures the President that the League didn't fire. The President warns Jean that despite what the League has done for the world in the past, the U.S. government will come down on them if their investigation finds they did fire that weapon. Later, Waller informs the President her and all of Cadmus survived, having moved from the facility when Superman compromised it. She suggests a strike against the League, but he's unsure and wants to weigh his options.
The Leaguers help with rescue efforts near the blast site. While they are praised by some, others point out that the beam came from space and must have been the same weapon they used against the robot spiders in Nevada. The Cadmus Council waits for the President's call, but Waller grows impatient. She gathers Galatea and tells her that her mission is to take out the Justice League. To help her, she opens a vault, revealing dozens of copies of the Ultiman.
Yes, so... Whew, a lot to discuss in this one. To start out with, I like how Captain Atom refuses to disregard orders despite Superman and Huntress telling him how ridiculous this all is. She even says, "Dude, Superman just told you to step aside."
Right.
And I also love how he repeatedly refers to her as ma'am. That's not going to happen, ma'am. Just
I mean, it's kind of like, you know.
Yeah. he's very proper. You know, he's a good soldier. He just, you know. He treats you with respect, but he's telling you, no, I'm not going to do that. I have my orders. We learn why his hand was glowing red last time. He says he controls radiation, and that includes red sun radiation. That's how he's able to wallop Superman. But I've always wondered how that works. Does the red solar radiation fill Superman's solar-powered cells and negate the yellow solar energy that's in there? Or at least begin to? I mean, I get it if he's off-world or under a red sun for a bit.
Right. I mean, you would think that that would be something that would take time to affect rather than immediately.
I mean, if he had changed it into kryptonite, of course, then Superman wouldn't have had a chance. Right. You know, so, I mean, I get it. Superman tells Huntress to get questioned out and not to wait for him, and she says...
What makes you think I was gonna?
Yeah, that's nice. Superman gives non-member Huntress his comlink earpiece and tells her to contact Jean when they're outside because Cadmus has the place shielded, which, you know...
Would make sense, yeah.
Of course makes sense, yeah. Then Superman and Captain Atom beat the stuffing out of one another for several minutes. Maybe it's the title Captain Superman has a problem with, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Captain Marvel, Captain Atom, look out, Captain Crunch, you know? Nice touch that Superman picks up a piece of the lead shielding, knocked off the wall to block Adam's blast, and slams him with it. I like that. Question tells Huntress she shouldn't have come for him, and she chastises him for sneaking off without her. Couple squabble.
Right. I mean, you know, I gotta look out and do, you gotta do what I tell you, baby.
Yeah. Huntress has to take out some Cadmus guards, but she doesn't even seem to work up a sweat. She does have to figure out how to unlock the door, however.
Right, and I mean, it's one of those cases, then she's working on it, she's like, of course it's locked, of course. And she's working on it and everything, and trying to work on it with some kind of gizmo, but then Superman comes, and, you know, him and Captain Atom go through it, and she's like, oh, she walks out of the hole, that's convenient.
Yeah, I like that, yeah. But they still have to make it to the surface, and there's hundreds of flights of stairs. Question says he can't make it, but Huntress uses the grapple and her crossbow to go all Batman 89.
I know, but she didn't ask him how much he weighed.
Yeah, she should have. How much do you weigh? Oh, about 180, or something like that. Huntress kicks off the door to the outside and calls Jean. He tells her she's no longer a member of the League, but she tells him to save it. She says...
Q is down and we're under fire. She tells him to scan the area and that Superman won't be far behind him.
Yeah.
I have a problem with this right off the bat because she's like, this is an emergency. And he's like, get off the line. You're not League anymore. She told you it was an emergency, dude. You know, at least have the courtesy to listen to her. She says it's an emergency. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, but that was a butthole move on Jean's part.
Well, but I mean...
I don't care. Somebody says in an emergency, he's supposed to be a superhero that helps people in emergencies, even if it's somebody that he doesn't agree with. It seems like he should at least give her the courtesy to listen to what it is.
I see your point. Okay. Captain Adam's containment suit now has tons of cracks in it. You better watch out for that.
Uh-huh.
Kingdom Come, not a good thing. And
yeah.
Then, you know, and in the first episode, he had to go up into space and in initiation and expel, you know, and then they had to fill him back up, you know.
So yeah.
Superman wraps Captain Adam's hands in rebar.
And I love how he just walked past a piece of, you know, what the rebar is in and just pulled
it out. Piece
of
concrete.
Yeah, like pulling a tissue out of a box.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I mean, if you've ever tried to remove rebar from concrete,
gosh.
I mean, you've got to basically chip away till you get to the...
Oh, you got
to
chisel it out.
Yeah, chisel it out. There's no way, yeah. But, of course, Captain Atom blasts him again, despite Superman saying he's getting tired of the blasts. But he moves out of the way while Atom is charging, and his head goes into a wall, and he's punch drunk at this point.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he just keeps fighting. Superman tells him he's put up a good fight, but stand down. He says, I can't do that, Superman. And he comes and supers again, but... Superman dodges each strike, then he uppercuts him into a wall, and finally Captain Atom collapses on the floor. And I really like this part. Cadmus guards and medics arrive. Superman yells, don't touch him! He's Justice League, and carries him away. So, I mean, Superman knows the situation Captain Adam's caught in.
Yeah.
You know, that with Captain Atom, this is, you know, there's ties to the government. He is... You know, in the military, the U.S. military, and he has been told to stop them. He understands he's doing his duty, whether it's the right thing to do or not, it's what he was ordered to do. So Superman understands that. You know, it's different than Hamilton. Hamilton made that choice.
Right.
To side with Cadmus. You know, Captain Adam's just, you know, taking orders, you know, which...
In the words of Odo from Deep Space Nine, I'm sorry, however...
Okay.
The law is the law, but justice is justice.
Yeah. But see, but, I mean, the thing is, in this storyline, you know, there, I mean, the shades of gray in this storyline, somebody's going to get caught in the middle of this.
I know, but
Yeah. I know, well, you're on the Justice League side, but I mean, it's and I get it. I mean, I am too, but at the same time.
No, I get where part of this is coming from, and that's the great thing about the writing that is in this series. There is the moral quandary. There is all of that that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand Huntress's point of view. I understand, you know, where those things come from. I mean, this series is so much more than a quote-unquote kids cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, but that's what I'm saying. That's where that comes from. And that's the reason we do this, because it's such a great series.
Right. There's a whole lot to, I mean, there's a lot to just layers of story and character development and character motivation to discuss. And, you know, that's why we're doing it. And, of course, the Cadmus people just let Superman pass. I mean, at this point, why would you try to stop him?
Right. I mean, you realize that, you know, Superman was taking it easy on Captain Atom, honestly.
Right.
He could have creamed him.
Right.
I mean, you know, it was one of those cases he was hoping, I think, that he could get him to realize and stop before, you know.
Yeah. Back on the Watchtower, we see Captain Atom being repaired in a chamber. It's similar to what, like we said, in Initiation,
right.
When they were, like, you know, putting him back in his suit, but, you know, it's they're obviously trying to repair him. Huntress is with Question in a med bay, and he's having trouble breathing, and then he tells her, you know, get this off my face. He tells her to get an aerosol out of his coat pocket, just like in the comics. She sprays it, and his black hair turns red, and she peels the mask off, and Vic Sage beneath looks like he's got the hell beat out of him.
Oh, yeah.
Because he does. I mean, he's got one eye swollen shut. His cheeks are all puffed out. I mean, he's...
Yeah.
And I love what he says. You are right. I am the ugliest guy of all time. Which is a great callback.
I know.
To Double Date. And she says,
not in my eyes.
Aw. Sweet. I think it's funny. You think about it. The other great romance that was kind of, although there was some, you know, this is from the comics and the Greg Rucka stories, but the other great romance that was kind of out of left field to a point on Justice League was Hawkgirl and Green Lantern. And it was in a med bay when John was
that's
hurt,
right,
that Hawkgirl unmasks for the first time.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is a nice little callback to that, I think. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but
I almost had, you know.
Yeah. Supergirl is kind of like checking in on him, looking through the window, and Huntress just walks over without saying anything, turns the lights off.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think.
You little voyeur?
Yeah.
Quit looking at me and my man.
Yeah. Which, I mean, Supergirl's got the connection because Question and Green Arrow helped her begin to unravel Cadmus when this all began.
Right.
In Fearful Symmetry, really. But, She asks Kara, Supergirl, asks Superman what happened to Captain Atom, and she can't believe that Cadmus was able to turn him against the League, but Superman assures her that she did. And again, she's got that connection to Captain Atom because they went on the mission in Initiation, the first episode of Justice League Unlimited, and that's what she said, told her to
take the stick out of your butt.
Yeah, Corporal, yeah.
It's Captain.
Yeah, that's right. He also tells her about Hamilton working for Cadmus and how he is probably the one who cloned her, which, of course, again, brings us back to Fearful Symmetry. She wants to know when they're going to go shut down Cadmus, but Superman tells her he has one more stop to make first. Green Arrow walks up and wants to know what's going on. So now we've getting Green Arrow entering into this,
yes,
which, of course, he goes back, him and Question and Supergirl started unraveling all this Cadmus stuff. Superman visits Question, but Huntress only allows him 5 minutes since he needs his rest.
What I think's hilarious, you think about this. They're on the Watchtower, which is Superman's baby. You know, Superman and Batman's baby. You know, Superman, the one, him and Jean and, you know, all of them.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, this is my person. I'm giving you 5 minutes. I'm calling the shot. Baby.
And she's not even a member anymore.
No,
she's been kicked off the team, so.
But she's like, mm-mm.
Yeah. Question tells Superman about going to kill Luthor before he had the chance. And Superman says, that's not how we do things. And then he says, how do we do things, Superman? And I like how Jeffrey Combs has slightly changed his voice when he doesn't have the mask on.
Right.
Yeah. He sounds a little bit more normal. You know, just a little. I mean, I think it's partially because he's not doing all the whispery mystery man stuff right now. You know, he's not putting the effort into it because he's got the hell beat out of him, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know. You know, Question reminds him that his counterpart killed Luthor, and this Luthor is scheming to enrage Superman. Superman responds, doing a pretty good job of it.
Yeah.
and then I love Question just runs down. He says, ruining your reputation, turning your friends and comrades against you, creating a superpowered arms race, but you cannot succumb.
Right.
You know, he's laying it out to him. You cannot let this happen. You know, Question now cannot do anything to stop it.
Yeah.
But so now he's trying to, you know, appeal to Superman. Do not let this happen. Superman assures him he can shut Cadmus down without killing Luthor. And he says, carry on then. If you're wrong, it's not like it's the end of the world, right?
You know,
it's just like, again, Jeffrey Combs is great. And, you know, George Newbern and him have a great back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, like they did last episode. Just great exchange. Superman walks onto the bridge of the Watchtower and asks John to give him one good reason not to go down there and take them out. And John gives him the pad. If you didn't already know that answer, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Bit,
you know. And I love Superman. George Newbern's delivery here is, don't handle me, John. I'm serious. I mean,
yep.
It's just like, dude, don't even. I have had it with these people.
Yep.
He's not in the mood for any platitudes. Just don't. Don't give me the Pollyanna BS version of this. We need to go down there and take these guys out. Jean says they don't have enough hard evidence that they've committed any crimes. And you know, of course, Superman's arguing against it, saying, you know they're dirty. Then Green Arrow weighs in and says maybe they should put energy into proving that and, quote, and less into acting like a bunch of hyperthyroid stormtroopers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Ollie for the people.
Yeah.
And Superman says, I don't remember asking for your opinion.
Which, like, okay.
Yeah. Green Arrow reminds him that they hijacked him up there and made him join their team, and that Batman said he was supposed to keep them honest. And Superman's answer is just dripping with disdain. Do I look like Batman to you?
But then Flash, there you go.
Yeah, Flash brings it home. Actually, you kind of do. Especially when you're all scally like that. And Superman just stands there silent.
Yeah.
There's no rebuttal because only Flash could get away with saying something like this.
And the thing is, what gets me is he might look like Batman, but Batman would be on Ollie's side of this argument.
Batman was almost clear on the other side
of
the argument.
I know what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know.
Yeah. I find it interesting that Superman hasn't had much interaction with Green Arrow before, so he's really put out about him butting in. But he's got the history with Flash.
Right.
He's a founding member. They've been through a lot together. So he's going to listen to Flash, even though Green Arrow is trying to play the Jiminy Cricket role that Lois provided last time.
Mm-hmm.
So I like, and him and Flash are going to go back and forth with this because they're together, you know, in this. Although later, you know, Flash has to kind of pull him back, you know, but, you know, it's...
Well, and I like his line about what Grammy Flash always, you know...
Yeah, we're going to get there.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get there. Then we get a debate like the superhero version of the old Crossfire TV show. Superman says they can't let Cadmus get away with it. Jean agrees, but they have to remain cool. Supergirl reminds them of what they did to her. Green Arrow says Hamilton's a piece of garbage and Luthor's worse, but this isn't the way to stop him. Jean offers that Cadmus may have a right to fear them, and that evidence points to a connection with the U.S. government. Superman argues it has to be some rogue black ops group, not the real government.
Mm.
And this seems a bit naive even for Superman. I mean, who does he think Captain Atom works
exactly.
for?
Exactly.
You know, I think Superman's in denial at this point. Then Green Arrow breaks it down for them. He says he's the only guy without superpowers in the room, and you guys scare me. He points out if they decide to go down and take Cadmus out, who could stop them?
Right.
He couldn't do it. Supergirl, who is quite angry about this accusation, responds,
so you want the government to have a bunch of superhuman weapons just to keep us in check?
No. I don't know. Yeah. And Superman and Supergirl just glare at him.
Right.
You know, like, then we get a Green Arrow speech that would make Denny O'Neil proud. And he says, look, I'm an old lefty. The government must do for people what people can't do for themselves. The people sure can't protect themselves from the likes of us. So Green Arrow is both inside and outside the league here.
Yes.
You know, this was pretty much his role once his character was defined as an old lefty by Denny O'Neil. in the classic JLA satellite era. Mm-hmm. So that didn't, they didn't have a death ray, but he was always trying to remind them that, you know, the hovering gods in the city above the earth, that there were the little people down below.
Right.
And that's what he's doing here, which I really like. I mean, they've got Green Arrow being the classic Green Arrow of the comics. Now, my question is, do Kryptonians get migraines? Because Superman seems to have one.
Oh, I know.
He has his head down. He's got his hand on his forehead arguing. They aren't talking about the government. We're talking about a shadow cabinet that has taken it upon themselves to eliminate us. They came after us. We have to hit them back hard. And that's when Flash says,
Grammy Flash always used to say, the trouble with an eye for an eye is that everyone ends up blind.
And again, Superman doesn't know how to respond.
Yeah.
This is, you know, he's going to listen to Wally more than Ollie, you know, which I do like. You know, Green Arrow is like kind of an interloper here to Superman. But Flash has his...
He's the new guy.
He's the new guy. Flash has his seat at the table.
Yeah.
You know, he's, you know, and Green Arrow is just kind of, you know, this loudmouth, overly opinionated person that just needs to shut up. So, what do you think about this whole exchange?
It's one of those cases, you know, it's one of those things that I see where Flash is coming from, but at the same time, you know, you can't just take it either. There has to be some response when somebody does you dirty.
Right.
You know? I mean, I get his point of view, and I get that, but at the same time, I also see where Superman's coming from. It's one of those really hard things to do. I get it, though.
And I like that Jean, you know, I mean, obviously Superman and Supergirl are, well, Supergirl wasn't on Earth that long, but they're both aliens, but she was in like a sleeper pod. But, you know, but they're both, they're aliens, but they were, you know, they've been integrated into human society more. You know, where Jean, you know, stayed isolated, you know, has stayed, kept himself, he's been more just a Justice League member. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's kind of modulating the two sides of, you know, Supergirl and Superman versus Green Arrow and Flash. And they're, you know, he's the moderator in some ways of this debate. But, you know, I mean, the thing to do, obviously, is proceed with caution. I mean, you can't do nothing.
Right.
But, you know, at this point, it's like they literally, you know, they've kidnapped our members and tortured them. They turned another member against us. You know, they're obviously out to get us.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, yeah. And I get so into the characters here, I sometimes forget to compliment the excellent writing of Dwayne McDuffie and the delivery of the actors. I mean, Newbern, Lumley, Nicole Tom as Supergirl, Rosenbaum as The Flash, Ken Schreiner as Green Arrow, they're all excellent. You forget they're acting.
Yes.
You just, these are the characters.
And Andrea Romano nailed it.
Yeah, I mean, she's directing them, you know, in their voice acting and choosing them for the parts. The conversation, even though it's just a bunch of characters standing around talking for like 5 minutes, it's completely entertaining and enthralling.
Yes.
You know, so I mean, that says a lot. And this is the moral conundrum of the whole season and honestly the series so far.
Right.
So we cut to LexCorp Tower and Lex is working with high-tech gear on some kind of apparatus under a tarp. More on that in some episodes to come. Waller calls them to tell them about Superman breaking into Cadmus and taking question. Captain Atom and Lex says, that was fast, but opportunity knocks. And Waller's puzzled by this.
Uh-huh.
As Waller worries about the question being in custody and them not knowing what he's learned, Lex walks over to a monitor showing an animated schematic of the Watchtower orbiting Earth and a countdown flashing that reads, optional targeting.
Uh-huh.
Yes. She tells Lex if they can tie this to him, they're going to come right to his doorstep. Lex says he's got a full pardon, but Waller reminds him that's not for new crimes. They'll disavow his actions if he's arrested, so Cadmus will just wipe their hands clean of him. Lex is typing on the console, tells Waller the League will have problems of their own, tells her goodbye, and then hits enter. The screen reads engaged, and when Lex says goodbye, Miss Waller, he means it as a final goodbye.
Yep.
Because he thinks he's going to kill her and take out Cadmus right here.
Yep.
He's got what he wanted out of Cadmus, and now he's going to, you know, he's going to get rid of them and blame the Justice League for it. And, you know, Superman for it. Back on the Watchtower, the heroes are still debating their course of action when the binary fusion generator alarm sounds. It's initializing on its own.
Yes.
Jean tries to override it, and we learn he's Command Authority 004. So Superman is 001, And I can't remember who is two. Is it Batman or Wonder Woman that's two? I think Batman's two.
I don't know, because I wondered about that, because where Batman is, you know, not there, not a full-time member, would they make him?
It came up in another episode.
Oh, okay.
I think Wonder Woman said she was 003, so I'm assuming Batman 004.
Oh, okay.
I think when Wonder Woman tried to get in a hot girl's, I'm sorry, Shire's quarters to get the mace,
she
said 003, I believe.
Okay.
So now we know. Now, I don't know. I'm assuming that...
Well, I mean, Batman is writing the checks. So,
yeah, Green Lantern 005 and flat, or, you know, 5, 6, and 7 are some combination of, you know, somebody, Green Lantern, Flash, and Shire, obviously there. So the computer recognizes him but won't comply. Jean gives the order to the members and staff to prepare for a binary fusion generator discharge, and that this is no drill. The tension of this scene is really... taut. You know, it's like, whoa. The music by Lolita Rittmanis really helps sell that things have gone from bad to catastrophic, or they're getting ready to.
Yes.
Jean pulls the wiring out manually, like, you know, phases through the panel and pulls the wiring out.
Yep.
But it reboots and bypasses circuit breakers, so it's like going to draw energy from the watchtower, which we'll see later. Superman flies out of the watchtower, making a hole in the side, which I hope no one was standing
in. And I hope it automatically had, you know, shielding so things didn't get sucked out into space.
Yeah. He almost makes it to the barrel of the gun, but it goes off and blasts him aside, and everything goes blue, which I think is a nice,
nice touch. Yeah.
Then we get an idyllic day in the park in a city on Earth. We'll later learn this is in New Mexico in a later episode. Kids are playing. Mailmen are going about their routes. People downtown look up to see a strange light. We then see the factory building that houses Cadmus beneath. The beam strikes it, and a mushroom cloud appears over the city. Cut to a commercial.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty chilling, and it's reminding me very much of The Day After.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if the most traumatizing TV movie ever made, and I'm sure that was intentional.
Yeah.
So, we return from break. We go back a few seconds. We see the city and, like, car alarms start going off. And then there's that white flash of the blast again. And then the aftershocks begin to hit.
Yeah.
Streets are uplifted. Cars are tossed everywhere. Overpasses collapse. And windows shatter while buildings crack. And later we see that one actually toppled over and is leaning on another building. We pull back to see the massive crater the fusion gun has created. I mean, it's just, there's nothing there. I mean, it's just massive. Rittmanis really nails the horror with a choir-like chant over the very sad music. It's haunting. And yeah, like you said, we are so beyond a kid's cartoon at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, we keep saying that, but it's like, I can't, it's like, they're literally, you know, at this point, there's action figures sitting there on the shelves at Target, and they're doing this and this, you know?
I know.
We pull away to see the city from the desert, and there's that giant mushroom cloud again. It's just very scary. Back in space, Dr. Light retrieves Superman while the Watchtower tries to recover from a near-total blackout. Jean says he needs visuals and communications because they don't know how much damage the beam caused. One question I got, though, is Supergirl is standing right there. Can't she just fly to Earth and check it out? You know, I mean, some of the other leaguers could, like, you know, get to Earth on their own power. Where the hell's Green Lantern right now?
Right.
That's
right.
What I want to know.
Maybe he's doing something, you know.
Yeah, he's got a big space sector to take care of, right? Jean tells Steel and Adam to get down to the reactor and see if they can't speed up the reboot. One of the staff says, well, maybe we can route communications through the annex. Those are the little floating things around the big watchtower.
Right.
So I guess that's what they were planning on doing. Flash asks what they hit, and Jean flatly answers, Cadmus headquarters. Flash takes charge and says he's taking some rescue teams. Wally is really stepping up in this one.
I know. I mean, I think he's just kind of like, I'm done with you. I'm going to do what's right. I don't care what you have to say about it. I'm doing this.
This is what we need to do right now. I'm not waiting for, you know.
I'm not waiting to take direction. I'm telling you this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something that in the past he probably wouldn't have done, but this is
character growth.
Yeah, this is character growth, and, you know, we're going to see more of that as the next few episodes show us, but... they do explain they can't teleport and that the bay doors won't open without power. So that explains why a bunch of heroes didn't instantly appear, you know, leave. But, you know, then the phone rings and pops up out of a bridge console. Flash says, whoa, is that who I think it is? And yes, it's the U.S. president and the league has a hotline directly to him.
Yes.
Which is kind of cool. And Sean says, "Mr. President, I know this looks bad." And the president responds, "Is that supposed to be some kind of Martian humor?"
Right, you know, just, like, dude.
Yeah. He wants to know why the league destroyed a high security R&D facility. So the president knows that that was something.
Yes.
So that ought to tell him, you know, he's aware that that was a government facility. You know, Jean tells him the league didn't fire. It was activated remotely. The president says he wants to believe them. Jean says they've never given him a reason not to. The press says he strongly disagreed with him having that space cannon floating over everyone's heads.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I imagine he would. Yeah. Jean counters with, if they had it during the Thanagarian invasion, they may have avoided a great deal of suffering. So, that kind of explains, they've never really said why they had the cannon. But right. Now, okay, we don't want, you know, the last time we had to have Batman, like, manually fly the old watchtower.
Right.
Into the earth like a damn missile.
Right.
But with this thing, we could just take it. We could have taken it out. Which I kind of get now. I wish they'd explain that more earlier. You know, it's like, why does the Justice League have a freaking, you know, giant
cannon
that's that could do this? But it makes sense. But again, you know, it's now that we've seen what it can do, yeah. The president tells him that the incident is being investigated. And he says, "You guys have saved the world more times than I've shot under par, so we give you a lot of slack. But if it turns out you're responsible, the full weight of the United States government is coming down on you. Got it?" Again, we know why they had the fusion generator. We're understanding a bit more about their official relationship with at least the U.S. government. The president making a golf reference is a nice touch as well. It humanizes him
right.
As he's discussing something, you know, in this very tense moment. And the president here is voiced by Robert Forster, who's best known for Jackie Brown, Mulholland Drive, The Black Hole, The Delta Force, Alligator, the list goes on. The guy had a hell of a career. He fits in with the tradition of the president usually being a cameo by a pretty big actor, you know, in a movie
yeah.
or TV show. And it's like, oh, that guy's the president, you know.
Yeah.
So they got, like, a pretty big actor to voice the president, even though it's just, like, for two little scenes. But he gives it a lot of weight. He sounds like he could be the president, you know.
Yeah.
I really like that. Unfortunately, we lost Robert Forster in 2019, but yeah, he's, you know, that was a nice get. I don't know how Andrea Romano got him, but good get, you know. So I'm assuming Adam Smasher is the big guy Supergirl refers to, who we see turning the manual wheel to open the Javelin Bay doors.
Yeah.
You know, he's got the spacesuit on, so you can't see that traditional gray and gold Justice League spacesuit. But I think you can kind of see his mask through the...
Okay.
Because you asked me who that was.
Well, yeah.
I'm assuming it's him. Because she calls him Big Guy. And you don't have her in the shot with him. She's in the distance, so you can't tell. Is it just perspective, or is she actually smaller than him?
Right.
You know, because he's, you know, grown.
Well, she's busy lifting the bay doors.
She lifts the doors while he does it, yeah. Back at the White House, a group of advisors chatter over the president's desk while he takes a phone call from Amanda. The president is surprised to hear from her since NSA says she's dead.
Uh-huh.
She explains that after the facility was compromised, they moved per standard protocol. So once Superman broke in, they weren't going to stay there.
Yeah.
You know, which makes sense. Waller is convinced the league fired on them, but the president says they aren't sure yet. She counters it was a retaliation.
We captured the question. They bust him out, and an hour later, it's death from above.
From her perspective, you totally understand that. I mean, literally, like, you know, we've crossed the line with the Justice League, and this is how they're responding. You know, they feel like we've crossed the line. Now they're just going to take us out. I mean, you understand why she thinks that. I mean, why wouldn't she think that?
But it also, like, you know, the president is playing both sides of the field here because...
Yeah.
He knows that the question was captured. He knows that a Justice Leaguer was captured. You know, it's not like, you had the question?
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you know.
He's been apprised of this situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah.
And then he's like, well, you know, if you did do this, how dare you retaliate against me even though I did something to you first?
Yeah, well, but, you know.
I know, but I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah, yeah. President says if she's right, it's their worst fears realized. So we know that Cadmus is known and connected to the highest office in the land, like you just pointed out.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I question, you know, but now that you've said that in my notes, I said, do you think he knows everything they've been doing? maybe not every single thing they've been doing, but he's getting the broad strokes of it, at least.
I mean, again, yeah. like I said, you had, you know,
you had.
Why didn't he say, you had the question? Why did you have the question?
Why would the president even need to know who the question was?
Right.
He's a no-powered mystery man in a trench coat, but he knows about, you know, when she says they busted the question out, he's like, wait a minute, he didn't say who's the question? You know,
yeah.
He knew, so she's been debriefing him about the situation, so yeah. She asks what he's going to do, and he says he's weighing his options. She says if they are where they think they are, Cadmus is their only option. The president was okay with a defensive contingency against the Justice League.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, wherever that tape came from, you know, however they got that, and I'm convinced that it is an actual videotape from the White House of the Justice Lord world.
From the other world.
From the other world. Once they saw that, you know, they're like, ooh, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, yeah. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, they never did this within the Justice League, the JLU, DCAU continuity, but the whole Batman having the contingencies against the Justice League. They did do the animated movie, Justice League Doom, which I think at one time was supposed to be, it was another one of those that was supposed to be in canon with the DCAU, and it decided not to. To do that, if I remember right, but they, you know, they adapted Tower of Babel storyline from the comics that Mark Waid did that first showed Batman's contingency plan. So this is like Batman doesn't have one, but the U.S. government has one,
right?
Against the Justice League, yeah. The Javelin and some transport ships arrive at the blast site, and Flash is piloting with Green Arrow, Dove, Booster Gold, Rocket Red, Vixen, and Vibe. And Green Arrow says, we did this. And Flash counters that he saw what happened. They didn't do it. And he says, it's our gun. If we didn't have it, they couldn't have used it. It's too much power for anyone to have. Considering the ongoing debates about gun control in the U.S., this is still very relevant.
Yeah.
I that popped in my head.
I'm glad. Yeah.
Whether how you feel about that, it made me think of that. So
yeah.
We see hundreds of civilians boarding the transport ships. Vibe is using his sonic powers to lift part of an overpass that has fallen. Booster Gold flies some trapped people from a leaning building. Elongated Man becomes a slide for them to escape on. I'm guessing Ralph and some of these others were
there was a second ship.
Or they were on the transport ships.
Oh, yeah.
They may be, not on the Javelin. Gypsy phases through a wall and rescues a firefighter trapped in a burning building. And, you know, I think that's the most we ever see Gypsy do on this series. But Flash retrieves a cat for a little girl who is boarding the transport that was left in their building, and he tries to give it to her. Quite a grip she has there, claws and all. Starting to hurt.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. The father thanks Flash for what the League is doing. He says he sees them on the news all the time, but he's just kind of taking them for granted.
Right.
And of course, Flash says it's a rotten situation, but they're just glad to help. They shake hands. It's all very uplifting. Until an EMT points out that the League is the one who caused this destruction. First they shoot at us, then they come to help us. So he saw the beam, and he brings up the fact that you guys fired that beam on those robot spiders in Nevada in that episode,
right?
Darkheart. Green Arrow's trying to, you know, explain that it's an accident, and he said, well, that makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah. All this destruction, and it was an accident.
Yeah, it's even worse in some ways. Several of the people walk away saying they'll take their chances. And Green Arrow says he's not sure what he's doing there anymore.
Yeah.
And Flash responds, people need us. We help them. So Flash is the conscience of the conscience here.
Yeah.
he's Jiminy Cricket to Jiminy Cricket in some ways. Which I think is really interesting. I don't want to make light of this at all, but considering this episode aired only 4 years after 9/11, the devastation in the League trying to help with rescue efforts, I imagine, at the time, I don't remember, I probably did think, wow, I can't believe they're kind of going here, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, now we're removed from it enough that it's still, that anytime you see something like that, you think about it, you know, you just do. But this was just, you know, 4 years later, and it's like, I mean, obviously this is, again, I don't want to make light of the real world situation at all, but just, It triggers anybody. I mean, it brings up thoughts that we've all seen on TV, and unfortunately, some people saw in person. You know, So it's just it just brings a weight to this that's just kind of like, God, I just it's well done though. It's not glorifying it. It's showing how awful this destruction is. It's not destruction porn. It's like, this is something that's just, it's not like Man of Steel where just like a whole city is just destroyed and you know like thousands of people have to be dead.
Yeah.
It's which I mean, in the defense of that, they did eventually address all that there was that much destruction, and obviously it motivated Batman to have a mad on against Superman in that film series. But, you know, it's just showing how just awful, you know, a destructive power can be, and it's really pretty heavy. It really is pretty heavy. And I'm sorry for this as a minor spoiler, but in the next episode we learn that there were no casualties.
There is no flipping way.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't buy that for one bit based on the destruction we see here.
I mean, you know, you see the whole, all those buildings come down, the roads buckle up
with cars flying everywhere. You know, you can't tell me those cars were all empty and nobody was in them. And, you know, the vibe like removes an overpass that's on top of cars and stuff. Some people would be crushed.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, there's just no way. I don't know if that was Cartoon Network mandating a line had to be spoken to soften this or not. But, you know, I mean, you can kind of question, maybe they shouldn't have done quite as much destruction here, you know?
Right.
I mean, maybe it was a little overboard. I mean, I know it, within the storyline, it helps, but it also, if you're going to go back and say, and give the Justice League a pass and saying, well, it didn't kill anybody, you know.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's kind of feels like what it is, and that's the one thing about this that I'm not crazy about.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it was a bit too much, so. At Cadmus's new headquarters, which is somewhere in a skyscraper, Waller, Eiling, Hamilton, and Dr. Moon await a call from the president. And I love how Eiling is impatiently tapping his pencil and everyone just kind of glowers at him.
Oh, man. I couldn't help it. You know how I am. And I probably would have reached over there, taken the pencil, and broke it.
Well, I worked with somebody once that did with a pen all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Everybody was just like, this is a thing. You know, it's just... And I can't imagine going through that while you're super tense over something like this.
Yes.
Waller jumps up and says she's done waiting. She goes to see Galateo, who is lifting a huge weight while they're, you know.
I will say, think about this. Earlier in the episode, you see Supergirl lifting the bay doors.
True. And a few episodes back, we saw Superman lifting that weight when Question got, in that last episode, when he got up underneath him and, you know, accused him of, I know what you did, you know.
Yeah.
So, or know what your other...
I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. She says she's fit for duty. As they walk off, she grabs a water bottle and a small red towel. She holds it over one shoulder, much like the short red cape of Power Girl.
Yep.
Which I thought was a nice touch. Because, of course, Galatea looks like Power Girl, who is an alternate Earth version of Supergirl.
Yes. Yeah,
the Earth 2 version of Supergirl.
Waller says, your mission is to take down the Justice League. You're gonna need help. She unlocks a vault door, and inside, dozens of copies of The Ultimate Awaken. Get it done.
Galatea then smiles, and they fade to black. So The Ultimate, and that's a callback, obviously, to the episode from season one that introduced the surrogate super friend,
yes.
You know, characters of, you know, Samurai, Black Vulcan, Apache Chief, and the Wonder Twins.
Yes.
And we saw what happened to them. They were clones. The League took Long Shadow in because, and he's not around, so I'm assuming he passed away.
Yeah.
He didn't last very long. You know, I don't think we ever saw him again, you know. And there was something in the back of my head that said we saw him again in this storyline, but we don't. So he must have
passed away
probably before season two started.
Yeah.
Here, so, yeah. So let's jump into our superlatives here.
Power action feature.
For power action feature, what did you have?
I think when Superman walks by the concrete and just pulls that rebar out,
yeah,
like it's a tissue.
It's real simple, yeah. I wanted to pick something out of that fight because it's really well done, but I mean, I think the point of this is just that destruction from the fusion cannon, and it's just like it's a power that the Justice League shouldn't even have, you know,
yeah.
And so it's like, that's, you know, maybe I shouldn't pick that because it's kind of a downer, but, you know, I just, it's really well done, maybe too well done. So, you know, depending on how you feel about it, I'm kind of starting to change my mind just thinking about it here. Yeah, so we'll go with that one.
Rotating chairperson.
For rotating chairperson, this one ought to be interesting. Who'd you have?
Flash.
I
mean, like I said, the character moment where he's like, okay, I'm taking the javelin. I'm going to do this. And like we talked about in previous episodes and things like that, Flash wouldn't have done that. He would have waited for instruction. He's like, no, this is what we're going to do. And he's like, hey, you know, I'm going to tell you what I think. Yeah. You know, he's not trying to be chummy. He's saying, this is how I feel. This is why I think it's right.
Yeah. Well, so I would have given it to Flash, but I know that Flash is going to have an even better chance to show his stuff. So I'm going to give it to Green Arrow because I don't think he gets another chance to kind of fill that role. And he's in for me as a, you know, as a fan from the Satellite era.
Yeah.
It's good to see him. And it's like we've said before, he's all the great parts of Green Arrow without going into that more obnoxious side or the chauvinistic side,
right,
that the comics sometimes got into.
Justice League communicator.
What did you have for, what's your favorite line or exchange for Justice League communicator?
I mean, of course you've got all of, I mean, there's so many lines and stuff like that, but as far as what was a actual funny one is when Huntress walks out.
He's gonna be fine, but he needs his rest.
I'll only be a moment. It's okay, Helen.
Five minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of like, you know, I know this is your house. I don't care. This is about my person, and I don't care. I will come for you. I don't care if you are Superman.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think, you know, that debate amongst the heroes is just really
like I
well
said,
done.
You know, I'm the funny
one.
No,
it's good that we picked two different ones. You picked the funny one. I picked one that's, you know, more serious. But it's that conversation that they had, you know. I mean, I can see each one of their points. I mean, I can understand why they all feel the way they do. I don't know what's, you know, they're in such a mess. I don't know which way they should go. I mean, I know what happens and I know how things work out. So, but if things hadn't been revealed that are revealed later, if it was more cut and dry, you know, and there wasn't these complications that are going to pop up, I don't know. What would they have done? You know, what was the solution? So I think it's just really interesting.
Comic connections.
For comic connections, there's nothing overt here. Like I said, we get Green Arrow as a social conscience. We get Galatea. Captain Atom kind of being semi-plant in the league is something from the JLI era.
Right.
You know, the government was basically keeping tabs on the Justice League. You know, Justice League International, the U.S. government was, you know, had him basically in there as a mole, more or less. So, you know, that kind of calls back to that. So that's a nice touch. And of course, you can hear about all that on the Justice League International Bwahaha podcast with Shaq.
Electricity is evil.
Electricity is evil. I don't think anybody got shocked in this one.
Yeah, Jean did when he pulled the things out.
Oh, but he didn't really get shocked, did he?
Yeah, because, I mean, they had all the electricity. It's like, oh!
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, but it didn't knock him out or
anything. No, but, I mean, you know, there is an electricity, but...
No, you're right. You're good. Good point. Yeah. Yeah, he did get shocked.
And you have electricity as evil because Huntress is trying to go through that door, and she's trying to, you know...
Yeah.
Override the electric door, so you know.
She almost looks like she got a soldering gun or something out. You know, it kind of looks like.
But I'm saying, you know, electricity is evil in that because she can't get through the door until Superman takes Captain Atom through the wall.
That's true. Yeah, so she never does get the door open.
No.
So what did you think about this one?
Oh, I mean, it was really good. I mean, again, so well done. So, you know, this happens to be, you know, it happens to be animated. It's not a kid's cartoon.
No.
It's an animated story.
Right, yeah. And this is about as dark as the series gets. This is the league at its absolute lowest. It's Darkest Before the Dawn, however. We're halfway through the four-parter. If you haven't watched this before, you may be wondering, when is this going to lighten up? You know?
Right, right.
Well, just wait. I don't want to spoil anything for you, but yeah, it's... This is heavy. This is probably the heaviest episode of the whole show in a lot of ways. I mean, when the Thanagarian invasion happened, that was, you know, heavy too. But it was, you know, because of the betrayal of Hawkgirl and everything. But this is heavy stuff. But it's worth it. It's worth it.
Extra special thanks to Jorge Luis Castillo, Matt Ryan, Neil Whitney, Jeff Owens of the Classic Horrors Club podcast, David Capone, and Rocket Dan Johnson, who specifically support JLUcast.
If you guys beam up to the Watchtower, they could use all the help they can get getting back online. So, you know, that'd be real help if you guys could do that. Next time, it's part 3 of the finale to the Cadmus arc with Panic in the Sky, a familiar title, but a very good episode. We'll have an extra special guest to discuss it with us as well, so join us then.
Bye.
JLUcast is a Franklin & Franklin production in association with Bugaloo Enterprises worldwide and is a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. The characters and properties mentioned in this show are copyright their respective holders. Likewise, all audio clips are copyright their holders and no infringement is implied. So please don't sue Mommy and Daddy. Emails can be sent to supermatespodcast@gmail.com. Comments can be left at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Find us on Facebook by searching for JLUcast and FW Podcast Network. Follow us on Twitter by using the hashtag FW Podcast. Please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. Thank you for listening to JLUcast.
One good reason not to go down there and take them out.
If you didn't know the answer, you wouldn't have bothered to ask.
Don't handle me, Jean. I'm serious.
We don't have hard evidence that they've committed any crimes.
Oh, come on. You know they're dirty.
Then maybe we should put more energy into proving it and less into acting like a bunch of hyperthyroid stormtroopers.
I don't remember asking you for your opinion.
No. How about when you guys hijacked me up here against my will and made me join this team? Batman said I was supposed to keep you guys honest.
Do I look like Batman to you?
Actually, you kinda do. Especially when you're all scally like that.
We can't let Cadmus get away with it.
No one's saying we should, but we have to keep a cool head.
Do you know what they did to me?
Look, kid. Hamilton's a piece of garbage, and Luthor's worse. But this isn't the way to stop them.
We must also consider the possibility that Cadmus is right to be afraid of us.
What?!
And there is strong evidence of Cadmus having legitimate connections to the government.
Maybe to some rogue black ops group. The real government wouldn't get involved in anything like this.
Hey, I'm the only guy in the room who doesn't have superpowers. And let me tell you, you guys scare me. What if you do decide to go marching down there, taking care of whoever you think is guilty? Who could stop you? Me?
So you want the government to have a bunch of superhuman weapons just to keep us in check?
No. I don't know. Yeah. Look, I'm an old lefty. The government must do for people what people can't do for themselves. The people sure can't protect themselves from the likes of us.
We're not talking about the government. We're talking about a shadow cabinet that's taken it upon themselves to eliminate us. They came after us. We have to hit them back hard.
Grammy Flash always used to say the trouble with an eye for an eye is that everybody ends up blind.